Crime and Crime Again is a true crime podcast containing subject matter that may be graphic or disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Born on January 25, 1997, Daniel Cornelius Robinson is the youngest of four children, born to David Robinson and Melissa Edmonds. Years ago, his parents did end up getting a divorce, and his father later remarried, eventually having another daughter. Daniel grew up in Columbia, South Carolina, and according to his parents, he was always a bright and ambitious child. He was born without his right hand and forearm. And his parents have said that this influenced him throughout his entire life to always strive for success. He was consistently determined to prove that he could do things on his own and that he could do them just as well as everyone else. So much so that when Daniel was very young and his parents approached him about looking into prosthetics for his right arm, Daniel refused. According to his family, he's always embraced everything about who he is as a person, and it seems that he wanted to prove he could succeed at anything, no matter what obstacles he had thrown in his path. And Daniel did succeed, all throughout his life. During his years in grade school, he consistently achieved excellent grades, and he even taught himself to play the French horn. He went on to learn other instruments like the trumpet and the trombone, and he even tried out football for a while. After high school, Daniel attended the College of Charleston in Charleston, South Carolina. At first, he wasn't quite sure what career path he wanted to take, but during his freshman year, he took a geology class as an elective, and from there, his mind was made up. Daniel found his passion with geology, and he graduated with honors in 2019. Relatively quickly after graduating from college, Daniel was able to land a job in his field. It turned out that the parents of one of his college friends had connections with a company based in Arizona, which is kind of what introduced Daniel to the company and the possibility of getting a job there. In 2020, Daniel began working for Matrix New World Engineering in Phoenix, Arizona, as a hydrogeologist. His job was to test the viability of the groundwater in wells across the state. Despite having to move across the country from his family, Daniel instantly fell in love with Arizona. When he first arrived in Arizona, Daniel was invited to stay with a friend until he found his own place. After about a month, Daniel did find his own apartment in Tempe, Arizona, less than 20 minutes outside of Phoenix. About a year after Daniel moved out to Arizona, one of his older twin sisters also ended up moving to Phoenix. This was exciting for Daniel. His family was extremely tight-knit, and he was happy to have family close by after living on the other side of the country, so far away from them for so long. And now, we'll get into the details surrounding Daniel's disappearance. Around 6 a.m. on the morning of June 23, 2021, Daniel Robinson left his apartment to start his workday. Around 7 a.m., he stopped at a Shell station in Buckeye, Arizona, just under an hour away from where he lived in Tempe. According to the official police report released by the Buckeye Police Department, surveillance video captured Daniel pulling into the Shell station and pumping $3.83 worth of gas, before leaving to head to his first job site of the day. After leaving the Shell station, Daniel headed out to a well site where he took photos of some work logs before leaving to head out to the next job site. That morning, Daniel received a phone call from a man named Ken, who he'd be working with that day. Ken had called Daniel to let him know where they would be meeting and at what time. While Daniel worked for Matrix New World Engineering, Ken worked for a company called Weber, and the morning of June 23, 2021 was the first time that they had met or worked together. As an important note, all of this information we have about Daniel's arrival at this well site and his behavior thereafter comes from Ken, who was the last confirmed person to see Daniel. According to Ken, both he and Daniel arrived at the well site, located near Sun Valley Parkway and Cactus Road, around 9 a.m. that morning, but there is some discrepancy about the time frame. Again, in the official police report released by the Buckeye PD, page 4 details the first report that Ken made to Officer Haley regarding Daniel. On this page, it's recorded that Ken stated he and Daniel arrived at the well site around 9 a.m., and Daniel abruptly left around 9:15. But on page 13 of the police report, Ken told a different officer, Officer Cruz, that he and Daniel arrived at the job site around 9:30 a.m., meaning Daniel would have taken off in his Jeep around 9:45. And it would later be learned from David Robinson, Daniel's father, that Daniel's cell phone actually showed an outgoing call that Daniel made to Ken on June 23rd around 9:28 a.m. This was presumably one of the phone calls they exchanged while arranging to meet at the job site, and Daniel was confirming directions. Soon after they arrived, Ken noticed a storm cell lingering right over the site, and he asked Daniel if he wanted to wait for the rain to pass before they began their work. Ken says that Daniel didn't really respond to this. Instead, he only asked questions like, "Do you want to go back to Phoenix?" and "Do you want to go home and rest?" which Ken found rather odd. Ken also noted that Daniel seemed to be distracted, and that from the time they arrived at the site, Daniel was just staring off into the desert and not really being responsive to any conversation. Again, Ken's statement is the only information we have about the last time Daniel was seen, and Daniel's family has openly stated that they find some of this story strange and questionable. About 15 minutes after they arrived at the site, Ken says that Daniel abruptly walked over to his Jeep and got in, briefly waving to Ken before he drove off, heading south. He didn't mention anything about where he was going or when he would return. Soon after this, Ken called his boss to let him know what was going on, and ultimately he remained at the site to continue working. Around 3 p.m. that afternoon, Ken was still at the site when he was made aware that no one had been able to get in contact with Daniel. It was at that point that Ken said he decided to drive around and try to look for Daniel himself. Ken explained that he drove south from the well site, the same direction he claimed Daniel had been driving when he left, and that he eventually came to the end of that road. The only options were to turn left or right. A left turn would take him east, back into the town of Buckeye, and a right turn would take him west, further into the desert. Ken told police that he was able to follow tire tracks that he believed were Daniel's, and that those tracks turned right at the junction. According to Ken, when he saw where the tire tracks were headed, he felt something was wrong, because he knew that Daniel had gone west, further into the desert, rather than going back to town or heading home to Tempe. Meanwhile that afternoon, a coworker and good friend of Daniel's named Roger had been made aware that Daniel had abruptly left his work site and had not been seen or heard from in several hours. Deeply concerned for his friend, Roger drove to the home of Daniel's sister in Phoenix to find out if she knew where her brother was, but there was no sign of Daniel or his Jeep at his sister's apartment. It was extremely unlike Daniel to abandon his work and not show back up. It was even more unlike him to go several hours without being in communication with someone in his family. He was always texting or calling his siblings or his father, and his silence immediately became troubling. Daniel's sister wasted no time calling their father David to let him know what was going on. David still lived in South Carolina, more than 2,000 miles away from Buckeye. But when he learned that Daniel was missing, he quickly called the Buckeye Police Department. According to David, he was told that he would have to wait a few more hours before the Buckeye Police would accept an official missing persons report. So on the evening of June 23, 2021, around the 12-hour mark since Daniel was last seen or heard from, David made an official missing person report with the Buckeye Police Department. That night, Buckeye Police conducted a search of sorts near the area where Daniel was last seen. But according to David, this search was more of a patrol across the streets of Buckeye, rather than a ground search at the well site where Daniel had been that morning. The next day, June 24th, Buckeye Police attempted to access the Uconnect system in Daniel's Jeep, which is similar to OnStar. They were hoping to see the location data from the vehicle, but ultimately, there was no GPS data available for them to view. Attempts to ping Daniel's phone were also unsuccessful. That same day, another officer with the Buckeye Police called David to ask further questions about the situation. While they were speaking on the phone, the officer asked about Daniel's social media, and David checked Daniel's Instagram. To his surprise, all of the photos that had previously been posted on Daniel's Instagram before he disappeared had been removed. The officer also contacted Daniel's sister, who lived close by in Phoenix. She also confirmed that it appeared that all of Daniel's Instagram photos had been removed since he went missing, but she couldn't confirm whether they were removed before his disappearance or after. When the officer asked her if Daniel had been acting strangely or if she'd noticed anything out of the ordinary with his behavior, there was only one instance that she could think of. It's not clear how long before Daniel's disappearance this occurred, but his sister told the officer that at one point, Daniel had come to her apartment and had just sat on the couch, staring off into space. He wasn't really interacting or responding to her, and this went on for about 30 minutes before he abruptly got up and left. I do want to make a note here that Daniel's family has since said that this was really the only instance they could think of where Daniel had been acting remotely strange. His family's also said that they believe this instance may have been blown out of proportion or taken out of context. And as soon as the police heard this, they kind of just ran with it. Daniel's sister also told the officer that she did not believe Daniel ever used any kind of drugs. The only thing she was aware of was that Daniel would sometimes drink, as many people do, and he also smoked weed. It is, of course, legal in Arizona. Daniel's family is adamant that Daniel did not use drugs, and they believe strongly that his disappearance and potentially odd behavior had nothing to do with drugs. It was during this officer's conversations with Daniel's father and sister that he learned that Daniel had recently mentioned to both of them that he had some sort of feelings for a woman named Caitlin, who he had recently met. It turned out that Daniel had been working part-time as a grocery delivery driver for Instacart as a way to supplement his income. Although he had a great job with Matrix New World, he did often have to pay for his own work expenses such as gas and some equipment, and Matrix would often take some time to reimburse Daniel for those expenses. On June 12, 2021, 11 days before his disappearance, Daniel was delivering for Instacart when he delivered some wine to Caitlin's home where she was having drinks with a friend. According to Caitlin, she and her friend were a bit tipsy when Daniel arrived, and they ended up inviting him inside to hang out with them. Caitlin and Daniel ultimately exchanged numbers. Friends of Daniel later said that Daniel told them he stayed the night at Caitlin's house that night, and one friend even reported that Daniel told him he and Caitlin had been intimate. But Caitlin told a completely different account of the night she met Daniel. According to her, they had only briefly hung out and exchanged numbers, and she didn't make any mention of her and Daniel being intimate that night. At 2:29 a.m. on June 13th, which was a few hours after Daniel likely would have delivered the wine to Caitlin, she sent him a text with a link to a podcast episode that she recommended he listen to. The podcast featured Eckhart Tolle, a spiritual teacher who's written books such as The Power of Now. Reportedly, the episode discussed letting go of ego, inviting positive energy into your life, and releasing negative energy. Daniel immediately replied to Caitlin, only saying, "Hey." Now, at this point, I will say, at least to me, it's not really clear whether or not Daniel actually spent the night at Caitlin's house. If he was at her house most of the night, why would they be texting back and forth as though Daniel had already left? I don't think this is relevant to Daniel's disappearance, more so just pointing to the fact that the story about Caitlin may have gathered some rumors while traveling down the grapevine. After that, Daniel and Caitlin exchanged texts for a few days, but it soon became bizarre and uncomfortable. A full day and a half after that first text, at 7:19 p.m. on June 14th, Daniel texted Caitlin, quote, "Hey, I accidentally left my canopy outside your house. Is it still there? If so, is it okay if I pick it up?" End quote. Followed by, quote, "The podcast was great," end quote. I do want to make a quick note that when Daniel says his canopy, he's talking about an outdoor tent-like thing that is portable and he can set up at his job sites to keep the sun off of him because he does work in the field in the desert. According to the police report, Caitlin didn't reply until the next day, almost a full 24 hours later, saying, quote, "Yes, you can pick it up whenever," end quote. And a few hours later, Daniel replied, quote, "Thanks. How do I get there again? I can come by now or tomorrow afternoon to grab it," end quote. And this is where it gets strange. According to Caitlin, she didn't respond to that message until the next day, June 16th at 2:06 p.m. Her message said, quote, "Hi, I saw you on the camera. I'm in Flagstaff and will be home later tonight. If you want, I can put it out front by the chairs before I head out for work tomorrow morning," end quote. So at this point, Caitlin is texting him because she can see him on her home security camera, probably trying to knock on the door to pick up his canopy. An hour later, Daniel replied, evidently only sending a red heart emoji in response. And then a few hours after that, Daniel texted Caitlin again, only saying, quote, "I'm sorry," end quote. But Caitlin didn't respond until the following day, at 6:39 p.m., texting Daniel, quote, "Please stop showing up unannounced," end quote. To which Daniel replied, "Okay, I won't ever again." Caitlin then said, quote, "Thanks, and I'm looking right now and don't see the canopy in the garage," end quote. Daniel then said, quote, "Don't worry about it, I already have it," end quote. Which must mean that Daniel had somehow already gotten his canopy from Caitlin's house, even though according to her, she had not been home. Caitlin told him that she was confused, and he replied, quote, "I did grab it yesterday. I just wanted to tell you I'm sorry for disappearing the other day," end quote. Followed by, quote, "I couldn't stop thinking about you," end quote. These messages didn't seem to get a response from Caitlin, but 2 days later, Daniel texted Caitlin at 12:44 p.m. asking if they could hang out. Caitlin responded an hour later, telling him that she wasn't home, And a few hours later, Daniel texted Caitlin saying, quote, I love you, end quote. And several hours later, asked if she was home yet. Soon after that, Caitlin responded, quote, honestly, you showing up at my house unannounced made me extremely uncomfortable. I will not be home today, but I don't see us hanging out anytime soon, end quote. And Daniel then replied, quote, okay, but do you have any doubt? Either way, I'll have to be okay with your answer, end quote. There was no response to that message, but he texted her the next morning asking how she was feeling. Just a few hours later, he texted her again saying that he was outside of her house, to which Caitlin asked him again to stop going to her house unannounced. Caitlin continued to explain to him that she's uncomfortable and isn't interested in pursuing a friendship or a relationship with him, and the conversation continues with a few curt messages after that. The final text that Daniel sent to Caitlin was on June 22nd, 2021, the day before he disappeared, and this message is difficult to understand, and it doesn't really make any sense. The message said, quote, the world can get better, but I'll have to take all the time I can, or we can, whatever to name it. I'll either see you again or never see you again, end quote. And that is when all contact between Daniel and Caitlin came to an end. Something extremely important to note about these messages, which I quoted directly from the official Buckeye Police report, is that Buckeye Police never actually accessed or searched Caitlin's phone. The officer who spoke with Caitlin only asked her to take screenshots of the messages and upload them into evidence.com, where he would be able to view them and take them into evidence. So these messages are just from screenshots. The police did not view this conversation on Caitlin's phone with their own eyes. It's also important to note that some of these messages in the police report only show a day of the week and the time of day, not an actual date. Furthermore, some of the messages don't list an individual timestamp at all, possibly because they're all part of a continuous thread where only the timestamp of the first message is necessary, but I don't know for sure. Daniel's family was alarmed by these messages between Daniel and Caitlin. His interactions with her did not sound like normal behavior for him at all. It also struck them as incredibly out of character that Daniel would claim to have such strong feelings for someone he had only known for 11 days. I do also want to say and make very clear that I do believe Caitlin had every right to feel uncomfortable with his behavior and to tell him to leave her alone. I don't fault her at all for being concerned or disturbed by the things he said. I will say that Daniel's family openly believes that a lot of the messages between Daniel and Caitlin are missing from the police report, and possibly missing from the screenshots that Caitlin uploaded. But of course, we don't know for sure. The podcast that Caitlin had shared with Daniel was something Daniel had mentioned to several people in the days before his disappearance. He had talked about it with his father and sister, and he mentioned wanting to let go of his ego and clear out all the negative energy from his life. He'd also talked about the podcast with some of his friends, saying similar things. One friend in particular, named Luke, who was Daniel's roommate in college, did recall one comment that Daniel had made while Luke was in town to visit him. According to the police report, Luke had flown into Phoenix to visit with Daniel for a few days before returning home to New York on June 20th, 3 days before Daniel disappeared. Luke told police that he remembered being at a bar with Daniel when Daniel told him he was glad he was in town to visit because he'd been feeling depressed lately. Other than that, Luke couldn't recall any other instances of Daniel saying or doing anything strange or concerning. Buckeye Police did call another friend of Daniel's who had talked to Daniel just a few days before he disappeared. And this friend didn't recall Daniel saying anything that was particularly concerning, but he did note that Daniel just seemed off, not as conversational, not as happy-go-lucky as his usual self. On June 25th, 2 days after Daniel was last seen, police in Tempe, Arizona were asked to conduct a welfare check at Daniel's apartment. During this initial visit to the apartment, police didn't actually go inside. They only peeked in through the windows and attempted to locate Daniel's Jeep. There was no sign of Daniel at his apartment, and Tempe police noted that there didn't appear to be any activity inside. Family and friends spent the next couple of days attempting to call and text Daniel, but never received any response. Soon, Daniel's phone stopped ringing and started going straight to voicemail, indicating that it had either died or was turned off. That same day, Buckeye Police conducted a search near the well site where Daniel was last seen, but there was no evidence found. Initial requests to conduct aerial searches in the area were denied. It wasn't until June 25th, again 2 days after Daniel was last seen, that his aunt actually contacted Buckeye Police and convinced them that it was time for an aerial search. But unfortunately, nothing was found during this search either. As a matter of fact, there would be more than one aerial search in the first weeks after Daniel's disappearance, and not one of those searches turned up any evidence. David Robinson was frustrated with Buckeye Police from the moment he first called them to try to report his son missing. After a brief and unsuccessful search the same night David filed the report, he knew he needed to be closer to the investigation into his son's disappearance. David immediately made the decision to pack up and make the 30-hour drive from Columbia, South Carolina to Buckeye, Arizona, and he arrived in Buckeye on June 26, 2021. David quickly arranged to speak with Buckeye Police in person, and his daughter joined him. During the early days of the investigation, police learned that the last text sent from Daniel's phone was sent on the morning of June 23, 2021, an hour or so before he disappeared. There was no further activity on Daniel's phone after June 23rd. It was also discovered that the only activity on Daniel's bank accounts after June 23rd were direct deposits from his employer. There were no withdrawals or purchases after Daniel disappeared. The only thing about his bank statements that stood out to police was one charge from June 24th, the day after he disappeared, made at a local Waffle House. When police reviewed surveillance footage from the Waffle House, they discovered that Daniel had actually been to the restaurant on June 22nd, the day before he disappeared, and the charge had simply cleared in his account 2 days later. Based on the surveillance footage and the police report, Daniel arrived at the Waffle House in Tempe, Arizona just after 6 p.m. on June 22nd, and left with his takeout box around 7:10 p.m. Police have stated that he was alone the entire time he was in the restaurant. This discovery reminded Daniel's sister of another instance where Daniel's behavior seemed strange and off-putting. It turned out that she had spoken to Daniel the night he went to eat at the Waffle House. On June 22nd, Daniel's sister received a text from him that immediately prompted her to get in her car and drive over to his apartment to check on him. Now, Daniel and his sister had developed an emergency code of sorts, just a simple phrase or word that they could quickly text to one another if they were ever in need of serious, immediate help. So when Daniel's sister received this text, she, of course, quickly drove to his apartment, where she found that his Jeep was in the parking lot, but Daniel didn't seem to be home. While she was at his apartment trying to check on him, Daniel actually returned home in an Uber, carrying his takeout box from Waffle House. He was, in fact, perfectly fine, and told his sister that he only texted her the emergency code to test how quickly she would respond to it. Now, about that surveillance footage. David Robinson has requested to see this footage multiple times, but the only thing he's received from Buckeye Police are still images captured from the footage, which show Daniel alone in the restaurant. David is openly skeptical about the reasoning behind the Buckeye Police's refusal to show him the actual footage. It wasn't until July 6, 2021, 13 days after Daniel disappeared, that police entered his apartment to conduct a search. According to police, his apartment looked normal, but Daniel was not inside his apartment. On the morning of July 19, 2021, almost a month after Daniel disappeared, a local rancher was out in the area Daniel was last seen. While waiting for his cattle to make their way past, he spotted something in a ravine. Daniel's blue 2017 Jeep Renegade was overturned onto its passenger side, and it appeared it had been involved in a wreck. The windshield showed 2 points of impact where the glass had caved inward and spidered out, nearly shattering. There was extensive damage to the front end of the Jeep, and the sunroof looked as though it had been kicked out. The driver's side window was also completely shattered, and all of the airbags had been deployed. The Jeep was also still shifted into drive. The Jeep was found less than 3 miles away from the well site where Daniel was last seen on the morning of June 23, 2021. But there was no sign of Daniel anywhere, in or around the Jeep. What police did find, however, was clothing laid out on the ground just a few feet from the vehicle. Police found a t-shirt, presumably the one Daniel had been wearing the morning he went missing, an orange work vest, inside-out socks, and a pair of blue jeans, also turned inside out. Despite the clear evidence that the vehicle had been in a severe crash, there was no blood in or around the Jeep. This is particularly odd because the Buckeye Police have repeatedly told David that his son likely suffered a severe head injury in the crash, resulting in him taking off his clothing and wandering deeper into the desert. A nearly shattered windshield, signs of a hard impact on the front end of the vehicle, a shattered driver's side window, and all airbags deployed. And no evidence that someone was injured in the crash? Not even a scratch? And yet, the police have maintained the theory that Daniel suffered a head injury so severe that he lost all sense of awareness and direction and got lost in the desert. Inside the Jeep, police located Daniel's wallet, which included his cards and a student ID, as well as his cell phone, laptop, backpack, and his apartment keys. An entire case of water sat in the Jeep, along with a white hard hat, filled almost to the brim with what police assumed was rainwater. Something to note about the hard hat that was supposedly filled with rainwater. David Robinson has pointed out that there was very little rain in the area between June 23rd and July 19th. The total rainfall for that area during that time was only a couple of inches. There were also no other signs of water damage inside the Jeep. So David himself is skeptical as to how exactly enough water got into that hard hat to fill it almost to the brim. David was not notified that his son's Jeep had been located until the next day, July 20th. Police requested a collision report from a company called Santan Recon, and this company found two things of note about the Jeep's collision. One, it appeared that the odometer recorded 11 additional miles after the airbags deployed. And two, the ignition was turned over more than 40 times after the collision. David hired private investigator Jeff McGrath to further analyze the data from the Jeep's crash, and to investigate both the crash site and the damage to the Jeep itself. McGrath contacted the manufacturer, and he was told that the 11-mile discrepancy on the odometer reading is actually not unusual. I couldn't find any verification on this myself, but it's something to note. During his investigation into the Jeep's collision, McGrath concluded that the damage to the Jeep did not match the terrain where the vehicle was eventually found. He believes firmly that the Jeep was initially crashed somewhere else before being intentionally crashed into the ravine where the rancher discovered it. There was no forensic examination done on Daniel's Jeep until 3 days after it was found, and that was only because David Robinson had requested that the Jeep be dusted for fingerprints. There was no further examination of the Jeep for blood or other DNA samples. After the fingerprint testing, the Jeep was turned over to David, which indicated to him that the police had no intention of further examining the Jeep for any evidence. David also gained possession of Daniel's other belongings, such as his cell phone, which allowed him to further investigate Daniel's calls, texts, and social media communications prior to his disappearance. David discovered that Daniel's conversation with Caitlin had been deleted, and only her name and phone number remained in his phone. When David accessed the actual phone records for Daniel's phone, he discovered that Daniel and Caitlin had sent a lot more text messages back and forth than what was presented in the official police report. Unfortunately, there is no way to tell what those messages actually said, as the phone records only list the phone numbers and the timestamps for when those messages were sent and received. David Robinson has organized searches basically every week since Daniel disappeared more than a year ago. His search teams have covered thousands of acres of ground across the Arizona desert, but no further evidence has been found in connection with Daniel. What David and his search teams have found, however, are other sets of human remains. On July 31st, 2021, search teams located a human skull near the crash site of Daniel's Jeep. This was later confirmed not to be Daniel Robinson. On November 6, 2021, David and his search team located two human femurs, hip bones, and vertebrae. Those remains were also confirmed not to be Daniel. David is still living in Arizona, leading the charge in the search for his son, as well as heading his own investigation into Daniel's disappearance. David has also set up a Facebook page dedicated to the search for Daniel. I will link this page in the show notes, but it is called Please Help Find Daniel, and there David hosts frequent live streams and Q&As where he discusses the case and offers up new information and insights. These videos, as well as others, are also posted on the YouTube page, also called Please Help Find Daniel, and I'll link that in the show notes as well. Jeff McGrath no longer works on the case, and he has said that that's because his investigation into the Jeep's crash was completed, and there was no further evidence he could gather from it. David has since hired another private investigator, as well as a team of other experts in the field who he consults with throughout his investigation. David does have a GoFundMe dedicated to the search for Daniel, as his investigation into his son's disappearance does require access to certain resources. I will link that GoFundMe in the show notes if you would like to donate to aid in David's search, or if you would like to share the fundraiser and spread the word. There is also a petition created by Daniel's family, urging the Buckeye Police Department to change the classification of Daniel's case from a missing person to a criminal investigation, which would hopefully fuel more resources and, frankly, effort on the part of the police. Daniel Robinson is a now 25-year-old black man with black hair and brown eyes. He was born without his right forearm and hand, and he does not wear any prosthetics. He was last seen on the morning of June 23, 2021, at a well site near Sun Valley Parkway and Cactus Road in Buckeye, Arizona. His blue 2017 Jeep Renegade was found on July 19, 2021, nearly a month after he disappeared, and it had been involved in a serious collision. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Daniel Robinson, from Buckeye, Arizona on June 23rd, 2021, please contact the anonymous tip line that Daniel's family has set up. You can call 844-602-0660, or you can text the word TIP to this same number. Whether you call or text, you can remain anonymous. You can also send an email to contact us at pleasehelpfinddaniel.com. Please do go visit the family's website, pleasehelpfinddaniel.com, for more information and tips on how you can help in their search for Daniel Robinson. All sources for this episode will be listed in the show notes. If you'd like to request a case for me to cover, you can find the link to the case request form in the show notes as well. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at CrimeAgainPod, on Instagram at CrimeAgainPodcast, and on TikTok at CrimeAgainPodcast. Links to other pages like YouTube, Patreon, and GoodPods can also be found in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode of Crime and Crime Again.